Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Listick Behind the Curtain, our opportunity to take a look at theater and the arts. And today we go into the music world and talk about a legend, an icon, a woman who is still around, but who just changed the look and shape of music. And I'd like to know more about how and why that happened. So I've got the perfect guest. Jane Eisner is a journalist who has recently written a book about the life of Carole King. Yes, you know who I'm talking about. I don't care what age you are. Carole King. And the book is called, or the subtitle, She Made the Earth Move. A reference, of course, to one of King's greatest songs off of her Tapestry album. Jane, thanks for joining me and filling us in on some things we might not know about the life of Carole King.
Well, thank you for having me.
You know, it seems to me the best place to start, Carole herself wrote an autobiography some years back. Mm-hmm. Everybody has seen the musical Beautiful 18 times because it is so great and done so well. So your book, which comes out now in 2025, what led you to say we need more on Carole King?
Well, two things, I think. The first is the memoir, which was a terrific book, chock full with information. But like all memoirs, it's an incomplete story. There are things that are left out. There are things that are just mentioned in passing. And there are things that are told about that contrast with other sources. So I think it's really important to read any memoir, any autobiography with that in mind. And similarly, the play, which I agree is fantastic, and I've seen it myself three times on Broadway. But that too, is for that medium. It's, you know, a couple of hours, has lots and lots of music in it, which is what makes it so entertaining. But it also means that a lot of the story is left out. And so I felt like there was a really important opportunity to fill in those gaps. But even more, to talk about the originality of her music and how her life fits into a broader historical context.
And I have to say, you've mentioned that you filled some gaps, you say some things that she missed. One of the things I loved about the book as I read it was you actually tell us what those are. In other words, we don't read it and have to wonder. And so one example that I remember was you sort of say Carole in her autobiography or her memoir called The Natural Woman. She wrote it, you know, 2012, several years ago. But you said, you know, you wrote about her grandmother who went through a pogrom. And you said that, you know, King didn't mention that in her book. So sort of curious, do you think, I don't know if Carole's, maybe you do know whether she's read your book, but if she does read this book or has read the book, is she reading things about her life that she's saying, I didn't know that or I forgot that?
Well, I can't get into her head.
Right.
We know that she asked for the book, several copies, in fact.
Oh, well.
I don't know if she's read it. Hope so, but I haven't heard from her. It may well be that she knew that, but didn't want to talk about it. Also, since the time that her book came out, there have been other opportunities for her to learn more about her family. For example, Henry Louis Gates has this Roots series on PBS, and he uncovered things about her family that she didn't know. But that happens to a whole lot of his guests, too.
Yeah, and probably very magical for them.
Yes.
But you point out some of the smallest details. I mean, I have a copy of her memoir. It's autographed. Mm-hmm. But in addition, you point out that when she was born, her name was Carole without the E. And you sort of even talking about the, how do you find, I'm just thinking, I don't know how many years it took you to do this, but the details and those stories, you didn't get that from Wikipedia.
So, I'm a journalist. I do a lot of research. I talk to a lot of people. You're right. She was born Carole Joan Klein. She added the E to Carole in part because, frankly, there were so many Caroles in her school. She went to a very large, very good high school, public high school in Brooklyn. And she added, she changed Klein to King later on in high school when she was starting to sell her music and envisioned a life as a composer. Now, I also wonder whether there was some aspect of her thought process that said, Klein might be too Jewish a name. Maybe I need to have a name that seems neutral. I don't know, but I did wonder about that.
Well, which makes me, because you had these questions come up, and as you said, you know that Carol's asked for several copies of your book. Did you try to reach her to have her cooperate, or was that not what you wanted to do, or what is the history of that?
Oh my goodness, yes, I did try to reach her, not to cooperate so much as to interview her. I'd been living with her story in my head
Yeah.
for years now, and I just had so many questions to ask her that either she hadn't talked about or I wanted to learn more about. So yes, as I said, I'm a journalist. If I can't get in the front door, I try the side window and down the chimney and all sorts of ways. I try to go through as many people as I could. But she's notoriously media shy. She wants to be in the media when she can really control the message. And I get that. And I think she felt that she wrote the memoir. Her story's out there. It's a very brave memoir. She talks about things that were really traumatic for her. But then I think she just kind of didn't want to do more than that. So I'm disappointed. But at the same time, I think the book is a more analytical look at her life and music.
Yeah, and in fact, it's interesting because I know she didn't really want that musical on Broadway to happen. She wasn't behind that. She kind of got pushed into it. So she's clearly a very humble person. And in fact, I thought it was interesting. Two-part question. You write that she was ambivalent to, but also attracted to performing even when she was 8 years old. So as a journalist, how do you know that she was both ambivalent to, but also attracted to? Where do you find that?
Well, the attraction was clear. I mean, this is a woman
Well, her career shows
later,
that, right?
yeah, later in life who, played before tens of thousands of people in Hyde Park. And the chance to perform her own music before such a gigantic, multi-generational audience obviously means that she's really comfortable doing that. At the same time, she, not only did she kind of retreat into the wilds of Idaho for many decades, but even earlier in her life, you could see this tug. She was not just the first woman to achieve so much of what she did. She was especially the first mother. So there she is. It's early in 1972. The Grammy Awards are happening in New York. She knew that her music, her album, Tapestry, was up for consideration. Did she go to New York to be there and soak up the glory? No, she was home with a new baby. And that was quite amazing choice to do that. And I think that was also emblematic of this internal struggle she had. And in the end, it's very human. We all have things that attract us and repel us. And sometimes, oftentimes, as human beings, we're not consistent, and she wasn't.
I want to talk about Tapestry separately because you can't talk about Carole King and not do so. I know it was a very important album for you as well in your life. But to me, the address 1650 Broadway becomes almost a character, almost magical in your book as well. And even in the musical, I mean, 1650 Broadway. So for folks who are watching or listening to us now, what was 1650 Broadway? And I'm sort of curious, is it still there now?
Let me just back up a little bit. There's the building called the Brill Building, and yes, it's still there now. If you walk by it near Times Square, there's actually a plaque that defines it. There was also a nearby building, and both of them were places that actually almost work like a factory, producing extraordinary amounts of really terrific songs for this growing teen market that had just an insatiable appetite for more and more songs on the transistor radios that they were able to stick in their ear and listen to their music. So the way these buildings work is that there were small cubicles with a composer and a lyricist in each one, not just Carole King and Jerry Goffin, but Hal David and Burt Bacharach, Cynthia Weil and Barry Mann, and a bunch of others. And they were under the tutelage of a pretty aggressive but supportive producer, Donny Kirshner. And, so many of the songs that we associate with that era come from those buildings.
Yeah, they were written. I mean, she wrote songs for the Shirelles, and for sometimes you hear a
Yes.
song, and the other two, her friends and partners, they wrote the song on Broadway, right? I
Yes.
mean, so many songs we know today came from not just that era and that building, but from the people you just mentioned.
Yes, absolutely. And what you brought up is really important. They didn't write these songs for themselves. They wrote them for others. In some cases, like Will You Love Me Tomorrow, it was expressly written for the Shirelles. Other times, these songs were then peddled to different producers and to different musicians and agents directly. So that's what made this era so important, but so different from the way we perceive of music now.
Is it true you learned the piano to handle this project?
Yes, it's true. I started doing the research. I've been a lifelong fan. Some years ago, my husband gave me a big fat book of Carole King music. So when I started the project, I thought, okay, I got to understand this from the inside out. So I went to go play these songs and I couldn't. It just wasn't working. My fingers were not going where they were supposed to go. And so I decided I needed to take some lessons. And I did. I studied actually for 2 years with a wonderful teacher who was very patient with the older player like myself. And we did a lot of different things, but I did want to learn not all, but many of the songs on Tapestry to be able to describe them. Because again, I think when we think about songs, we tend to focus on the lyrics, but for the, in one sense, her early songs, and there's so many of them, she didn't write the lyrics. And then starting with Tapestry, especially, she has, just indelibly iconic songs that she did write the lyrics to, but underneath it all is just a love of melody, a love of chords, a willingness to play with the structure of songs and the structure of chords. And, the ordinary ear, like myself, you may not pick it up right away, but it adds to the texture of the song, to the mood of it, to the complexity of it.
And I play piano myself, so I get a lot of what you're saying. I thought after a couple of lessons I could play Rhapsody in Blue. It doesn't work that way. But did you also find, one of the reasons that I think a song, or in her case, Tapestry, an album, catches on and becomes so iconic, or think of a Beatles song, it's like because it seems so simplistic that it resonates, and you can sing it, you can report. But I am, did you find, as I did, when you look at Carole King's music, some of the songs may sound simplistic, but they were far more complex than you realized?
You're absolutely right. I mean, the simplicity also comes because you could sing along with them so easily. And yet, again, when I started to play them, I realized, first of all, how difficult they are. Like, for example, the song Beautiful, which gave its name to the Broadway show. That's really tough to play underneath. The chords are just really complicated. You also see key changes, like even in You've Got a Friend, that are subtle, but they add to the mood of the song. Or, another iconic song, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman.
Right.
The chords there sound like a church, sound like the amen in a church. And that's not coincidental. I mean, they really knew what they were doing, King and Goffin.
Out of curiosity, if somebody had come to you and they said, "Hey, we're naming this Carole King musical, Would you say go with beautiful, or would you have done something like a natural woman? Now that you know her so intimately, so to speak, because of your research, is there a different song title? Let's stick with her song titles that you might have picked to say this one might be more representative.
Wow, that's such an interesting story. I do think Natural Woman is complicated because, one, that's the name of her memoir, but also I think it's so associated with Aretha Franklin that it might be confusing. And some of the other songs that she's, that are just so hers, I don't think lend themselves to a Broadway show. It's Too Late or You've Got a Friend.
Well, you picked She Made the Earth Move for your subtitle of the book. Why'd you do that? I mean, I kind of think I know why, but.
Well, to me, it was, I hope people get this. I mean, not only is that a song she wrote music and lyrics to, and it was really important for me, but also I think it, I hope that it nods to her being a kind of earth mother. That's how she envisioned herself for many years, especially when she was living in Laurel Canyon. I think it also is a nod to her environmental a activism. You know, how much the earth, especially the wild Rockies, really means to her.
You have to read the whole book to get this transition that you write about, again, songwriter, performer, environmentalist, political activist. But through your study in her music, can you, in a brief way, did her music bring her through those various focus moments in her life, or were these things happening in her life and then the music reflected it?
I think it was both. I think if you think of her life in four movements, as I did, the first two being, childhood, New York, Brooklyn, Brill Building, that was definitely propelled by her music. Second movement, Laurel Canyon, Tapestry, the other albums that came after Tapestry that are overlooked but really terrific. I encourage people to listen to them. I think that was also defined by the music that she was making. The third and fourth chapter, when she kind of retreated into the Midwest, into Idaho, Northwest, and then reemerged with a Broadway show. I think those were more life decisions. Particularly in those Idaho years, she really wasn't producing much music of note, and that was her choice. I mean, you could look at it as an escape, or you could say, "Hey, that was a really feminist choice for her to make."
You have a chapter, if my memory's right, it's called 1971. It basically is the Tapestry. It's the Tapestry album. It's that year, and it deserves the attention that you give it. But again, generally, because people should get the book and read it and get all the details that we don't have time to go through. But at the same time, did you have a sense when an artist creates an album so 100% perfectly? I think every song on there is a hit. I, like everybody else, ran the treads out on that LP because I couldn't stop playing it. What is it? Was it about her? Was it about the time? How do you explain the magic of an album that just meets the moment?
Well, first of all, we have to remember that many of those songs, some of those songs, were written 10 years before then. I mean, Will You Love Me Tomorrow, Natural Woman. Tapestry wasn't just produced then. It really was a compilation of, if you will, some of the greatest hits from the King Goffin era, along with all these great songs that she, and sometimes with a lyricist that she worked with, Tony Stern, that they produced. So I think part of the magic of it is that it does combine so many different kinds of songs. I think that there was an authenticity to the way she performed and presented herself that did meet the moment. I think it actually led the moment, if you will. There she is on the cover, sitting on a windowsill in jeans, next to a window. She sewed the curtains on the window. There's her cat in the foreground. I mean, this was new. Most singer-songwriters then, and certainly most musicians before then, didn't have these kind of very domestic unstaged kind of presentations. And the other thing about tapestry that I think is worth noting is the important role that Lou Adler, the producer of the album and her longtime collaborator, the important role that he played, because he encouraged this. He really encouraged her to be in the foreground, sometimes with very little musical accompaniment, just to have her out there, her voice. You know, there she is singing Natural Woman. She couldn't sing it the way Aretha Franklin does, but it's her way of doing it. And there's a really interesting story about it that Lou Adler himself told me, which is they actually cut 13 songs for Tapestry. After they were done, he took the tapes with him, went to some, I think Mexico, if I recall correctly, and just meditated on these songs for a while and decided that this album was not going to be 12 individual songs. It was going to tell a story. It had a narrative arc to it. And he was the one who really decided how that arc was going to be completed, starting and completed. There was a 13th song that didn't make it. He just was striving for excellence and striving to tell a story.
She was born in 1942. She's in her 80s now. It's hard to believe she wrote Tapestry essentially at 30. When you look at her now, was she a product of her times, or do you think her music and her contribution was shaping times?
Okay, and you know, you're asking such good questions. In a way, it's both. I mean, she was a product of her times in her childhood and adolescence and early young adulthood, for sure. I mean, in researching this book, I really came to believe that her life, her growing up, was emblematic of what was happening in Brooklyn and Queens, the outer boroughs of New York City. In the post-war period, to these immigrant Jewish families who were just striving to make it into the middle class, to assimilate into American society, not just Carole King, you know, her contemporary in the high school next door, Barbra Streisand at Erasmus High School, her contemporary classmate at Queens College, Paul Simon, and I could go on. I mean, these are people who were coming of age at a time when things were starting to open up for Jews, starting to open up for women. And I think if she had been born 10 years earlier, these opportunities may not have presented themselves. Now, she pushed herself through the door. But you can't do that unless the social and political history around you is making that possible. You know, that said, I really think that she pushed the creativity of music ahead of popular music in particular, especially when she moved to California and worked on Tapestry and so many of those other albums, creating a unique sound.
Taking age out of it, her age out of it, if she had another phase ahead of her, does she stay in the world of political activism, or you studying her life, would you say, here's where I think she goes?
Well, by all accounts, she's very devoted to her family. And they don't talk. I've tried.
She controls them.
And I suspect she's doing a lot to, you know, be with them, support them. She has grandchildren. And I would think that that is very important for her, especially because, you know, she had a complicated relationship to her kids. She was on the road when they were younger. That must have been really hard. She brought her two younger kids with her to this very remote community in Idaho and homeschooled them for several years. Can't imagine what that was like. I'm not saying she's making up for those things, but rather perhaps discovering other things. Not that those things left her caring about her children, but discovering other ways to express that.
She's had such an amazing impact on the world of music, and I so enjoyed reading the book again, having a copy of her memoir. But I love the pieces you fill in, the pieces maybe sometimes you corrected, just because as a journalist you get to do that, right? I mean, if I wrote a book about my life, I'm sure I would be wrong about several things that I think I remember, but maybe never happened. I have another theory for you. Since you wrote a book about a woman who added an E to her name, maybe write a book about Barbara Streisand who took an A out. Think about that. And another book about every artist who's ever played with their name spelling. So, Jane Iser, congratulations on just such a very fun. It's and you know it's very readable. I just did it in like a few days. It's not. It's you know it's very manageable book into the life of just somebody so important to our society. And for folks who, for whatever reason, aren't familiar with Carole King, you probably are and don't realize it. But they need to read this because it's time to wake up to the difference she's made. I think she's made an incredible difference in our society. The book is Carole King. She Made the Earth Move, and I'd like to think she continues and always will make the earth move with her messages. Thank you for your time with me here on Behind the Curtain. I hope everybody. Everybody gets a copy of that book, and I can't wait for your next one. Oh, I guess that's my last question. Is there another project we need to know about?
Not yet.
All right. When there is, you let me know.
I will, Paul. Thank you so much for a great conversation.
Thank you, Jane. Thanks for watching us here on Paul Listening Behind the Curtain. We'll see you next time.